Welcome to A Toast to Work with Sue Ann Rollins. Conversations with amazing people in unusual jobs. A celebration of joy in the workplace. As I prepare to retire from the best job ever, teaching advanced ESL to adult immigrants, I celebrate the joy of the workplace with others in very different jobs from my own. There's always something in common, just when you think there couldn't possibly be. Welcome back to A Toast to Work. Today, my guest is going to tell us all about her family-owned construction company, Lisa Fleshman. It's a small-town, rural, blue-collar woman working in construction. So she will have some interesting things to tell us about working in her family-owned construction company. Welcome, Lisa.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, I'm excited because I don't know anything, and I love talking to... What I mean is I don't know anything about what you do. I've heard you talk about some of the, you know, some of the little projects you're working on or some aspects of your job, but I don't know how it all fits together. And it's definitely not my area of expertise, so I'm dying to know what it's like. So maybe, you know, I did do the introduction of saying family-owned construction company, but what does that actually mean?
So as many people can attest, when you have a small family-owned business like we do, it's exactly that. I mean, you have people who, you know, we all belong, you know, in the same family. We're all Fleshmans. And the business itself was started in 1975. So even before I was born, the business was started by my father-in-law. And he was also a full-time teacher. And so in order to, you know, make a growing family work during the summer months, then he would go out and do various projects like remodels or building a house or something of that nature. And then that really helped their family to be able to grow and make a living.
Oh, I love that. That sounds like a good fit.
Absolutely. So, you know, he is a master carpenter. He's really, really good at what he does. And about 15 years ago, I was working in corporate America. And just
like a lot of people.
Yep. It wasn't for me. It was funny. I would look outside of my office window working in West Des Moines, and I would see the folks who were working the flower gardens or who were, you know, taking care of the lawns. And I would think, man, they've really got it made because they're outside and I'm sitting in this gray cubicle right now. Grass is always greener, right?
Right. Well, but you're maybe an outdoor person.
Absolutely. So the opportunity came along for me to be able to join the family business, and I took it. And at the time, I'm not even kidding you, I didn't know how to use a tape measure. I had no idea what I was doing, but I was really determined because I thought, well, this is a really great way to help build the business, and also for me to be able to be out and about and doing different things as opposed to sitting in a cubicle all day long.
Oh, I had no idea that you didn't have any background in it at all. I mean, that's really important for, you know, my listeners to hear that, you know, you don't have to already know how to do everything.
Nope. No, you do not. And I was certainly going to get a education. Let's put it that way.
Wow. Yeah. So that the path from there, I am going to get back to this, how you got started, you know, with your role in the business. But if we could just establish like what kind of work is done, do you cover like home building, commercial, everything, basically?
Yes. All of the above. So we do light commercial, residential, remodel, all of that kind of thing. And as folks might know, if they work in a small business, you have a lot of hats that you wear. So my official title is lead design.
Wow. Okay. That sounds very impressive.
But I also unload trucks. I also make deliveries. Sometimes I am the head janitor because the office needs to be cleaned.
Mm-hmm.
there are certainly times when I'm doing invoicing, receivables, all of that kind of stuff. And so you do a lot of things in a small business because that's what it takes to make sure that the rubber meets the road.
Yeah. You see something needs doing and you do it.
You just roll up your sleeves. There's no point in complaining. Just get it done.
Wow. And that's a good skill in itself for everything else that in life. I'm sure. Okay, so now back to when you first, you agreed to become part of the business, but there must have been a steep learning curve.
there was very much. I remember the first week that I was on the job, I wondered what I had done to my career.
Because you left corporate America.
Yes, left corporate America. And my first week on the job was when we're training folks, you start with the simplest jobs and then you just keep moving up and up and up as you show your proficiencies. And I was no different, even though I was a fleshman.
Oh, yeah.
So my first week was being out on a job site, picking up garbage and throwing it away.
Okay. You can't be too proud to do that, right?
And I thought at the time, because I had just left a corporate job in which, I wore a suit every day and, I had my nails done and I wore the...
Oh, you had your nails done. Oh, my gosh.
That was part of the expectation of working in that office.
Wow.
And here I was picking up garbage and I thought, oh, my God, what have I done? Yes, it's very humbling, but it's also a skill that in this job that you need to know how to do it.
Right.
And then not too long after that, all of a sudden, I was out painting houses. And then after that, then I was working in other, various areas of, Lisa, you need to know how to do this, 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 and this. And so I wouldn't say that I'm a master of all of those trades, but I certainly know how to hang a kitchen. I know how to lay flooring.
I know
how a foundation works. I understand why you do certain things as best practices. And it is because of that experience of step by step by step, I would be on these job sites learning how to do what at the time seemed like menial stuff, but built into a career.
Oh, wow. It sounds like good training. So who would be actually training you? I mean, what's the structure like? So your father-in-law was the head of the business?
It started out there where he said, okay, kid.
kid.
Here's a trash bag. Clean all of this.
Uh-huh.
And then it would be like, okay, well, here's this piece of equipment and here's how we use it safely.
Mm-hmm.
And here is another thing that we're going to do on the job site. And you need to understand how this works so that when you're talking to clients someday, and when you're talking to vendors and when you're talking to subcontractors, that you can intelligently discuss these topics.
He sounds like, I just made the connection, the teacher.
Yes.
Yes, he totally got how to teach. Did he end up quitting his teaching job?
No, he did. No, he taught for over 40 years.
So he kept the two going?
Yes.
Okay. But the construction business was growing.
Yes,
during
that's right.
this time. And then he just was doing two big things.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, that was an important thing. Okay. So you're learning everything. And eventually, you're lead designer.
Yeah.
But doing everything else also. Anything else.
Yeah. Yes. So, there were times when I would be out on a job site and it'd be muddy and icky and cold and just misery. But the skill sets that I was learning of, okay, well, this is how we measure this and this is how we do this, and mm-hmm. being able to walk in and say, hey, folks, this sink's not in the right place. And if we don't mm-hmm. fix it now, it's going to be really expensive to fix later.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Learning things like, receivables. Did we get everything on the truck that was supposed to come this week? Is it here? How mm-hmm. do we inventory all of this to make it make sense? To make sure that when we need it, it's not missing. So I was learning skill sets like that. At the same time, I would come home at night, and after, everybody would, go to bed, because of course, we still have a family and we're raising our daughter. I would get online and I would take these little courseworks of, what is a CAD program and how do I use it?
Oh my.
How do I continue to grow my skill sets so that I can become a real value add and build, this piece of the business in a way in which it has not been built before.
Oh, so you were part of the making sure this business was surviving and updating right?
And thriving and giving our clients a different experience
mm-hmm.
than what they might have gotten from folks who were just doing the same old, same old.
Yeah. Wow. So you've got that real initiative and drive. Totally. You were in 200%. I love to use that 200% thing, but you had committed and you were totally into it. And wanting to make it, like you said, thrive.
Absolutely. I think one of my favorite things that I have learned, well, there's been a lot of really great lessons, as happens when you're in business. But one of my favorite things was I had been talking to a client who said, well, is there some way that instead of just this 2D paper plan that you have, that I can see how my house is going to look once it's built. And I knew from video games and that kind of thing, the technology was there to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I started looking around for, who can make this into a 3D model? Think of it as Sims for real life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I looked around and looked around and could not find anybody. And I thought to myself, well, why don't you just learn how to do it?
Are you kidding? Wow.
I'm very serious.
you can do anything. I'm convinced you can do anything, Lisa.
I don't know. I don't know. But it was something that it gave me a great deal of interest. I was like, well, can it be done? Can mm-hmm. I do it? Am I adept enough to be able to learn this whole new programming language and learn how to turn this into something that people can see, from the privacy of their own homes, and do a walkthrough on their house before we ever pick up the first hammer. Right. And that actually was a really important game changer for us. My first models were really basic, but people were like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. And then they finally became these models that were fully textured, fully colored, immersive, and people could make decisions months ahead of time about the color of their flooring, the color of their walls, what the shingles were going to look like. How about this window in this position? What if we change it over here? And they could just walk through virtually their home. And that was really a big deal.
Wow. So how long ago was this? Because I think that's getting more and more like where people's expectations are, that they think they're just going to be able to see that. Because, of course, they can play a game like
yep.
that.
I started doing that probably, I started my first, and they were very, now I look back on them, I'm like, yeesh. but at the time, nobody else was doing it.
Yeah.
And so, but that was probably 5 years ago, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And now, as to the best ability of the technology, now we're able to go ahead and put that house on that lot with the background you're going to see out of the windows.
Oh.
You know, where does your couch go? Where does your television go? How does the bedroom get set up? What do all these things look like together? And so that's a lot of fun. And it's also a big deal for our clients because they know what to expect now. Either the house looks like the pretty picture,
mm-hmm.
or it doesn't.
Yeah. Well, so that keeps you guys on your toes then, right?
It does. And it's great for all of the subcontractors who come mm-hmm. in to work on a project like that, because it's simple. Either it looks like this picture or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, why not?
And the picture's it keeps everybody. The picture's based on the specs, right? That everybody's working off of.
Yes. Yes. Okay. But the specs are developed from that virtual reality session.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So let's say that someone walks in and they think initially while we're talking, I think I'd really like to have walnut floors as mm-hmm. an example.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the 3D modeling, okay, let's go ahead and put walnut floors in. And they take a look at this 3D model of which they're immersed in. And they say, ooh, gosh, that doesn't look the way that I mm-hmm. thought it would. Okay. And with the click of a button, let's try maple floors. Let's try oak floors. What does it look like if we do tile, et cetera, et cetera? Mm-hmm. And it allows homeowners to really make decisions ahead of time so that they know what to expect and they know what the cost is.
Yeah. And it's not trial and error.
There's no trial and error. Exactly.
Well, this makes me think, I'm very curious about the whole process. So you talked a little bit there about that when you're making the decisions with the client. So let's go back to the very first step of a project. You get some sort of contract with someone. How do you get the business? How do you, start a project? So you could just pick one. Since we were talking about houses, I guess that would probably be a good example.
Sure. I mean, the vast majority of our clientele are going to be word of mouth, although we do some Facebook advertising from time to time. We have done home shows in the past where folks can come and meet us and, see our portfolio of work after, more than 40 years of business. We do have a little bit of a portfolio, a little bit.
Yeah.
And so what typically will happen is a client will reach out, we'll have a short conversation over the phone of what their project is, what they're looking to do, and what their timeline is. Then we'll have them come into the office so that they can meet us, because it's important that when you're talking about something like building a home, you're going to be spending a lot of time with someone over the next several months.
Yes.
And so it's important to make sure that our personalities are going to get along together,
right.
That we have kind of the same vision for the project, and that, everyone's acting in good faith. And so we'll have that kind of introductory meeting in which I ask a million questions. I ask all kinds of questions about the project that they're envisioning. And it's not just about square footage or the neighborhood. One of my favorite questions to ask folks is, tell me about the favorite kitchen you've ever been in your life, where it was, and how you felt.
Oh, because that's really what they don't realize. They might not realize that that's really what it's going to boil down to. And mm-hmm. they might get stuck on things like color, and it's more of a feeling.
It's a feeling. It's always the feeling. How do you want this place to feel when you open the door every day when you come home from work? How do you want it to feel?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And then that gives me a lot of clues for then the design piece of it.
All right. Now, do they have a lot in mind at this point, or how does that?
Maybe location? Not. Yeah. You know, they might have a Pinterest board of, you know, well, I saw these things that I like, or, mm-hmm. you know, here's some pictures I took of other houses when I was out and about, and I kind of like this look or whatever. But at the end of the day, we want to make something that is unique to them, their family, their situation, and that's really going to work for them, so that when they sit down at the end of the day and they look around, they are completely at ease. They're enjoying where they're living, and they love everything about it.
Do they have a place, a bit of land that they already have for the house, or are you involved in securing property?
Sometimes folks will say, "Well, I'd really like to live on the edge of town," or "I'd really like to live here, there, or wherever." Right. And we can certainly point folks to those areas of, you know, well, have you checked out this or this or this? Mm-hmm. But sometimes folks are like, "I've got my lot, I'm ready to go. And, you know, here's where it is." When that happens, we'll actually go out with them and do a job site visit. And like I said, this might be just completely a bare lot with nothing in it.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to figure out the lay of the land. We want to know how the lighting comes across, what's next door, what's down the street. You know, are they off of a busy street? Do we need to make sure that we do some sort of noise reduction? So we definitely want to see those lots.
Uh-huh. So there's a lot that goes into this before anybody signs on the dotted line. Is that true?
Oh, that's very true. Very mm-hmm. much true. We prefer, and it's not always 100% possible, because I mean, folks can change their minds about different little aspects, but we like to have a line item budget done complete, so that folks can see exactly where the dollars are going and why they're going there. And if they change their minds, that's fine. You know, right. I mean, if someone decides, "Oh, well, you know, I really don't want this bathtub. I want this other bathtub that I saw, mm-hmm. and it's just gorgeous and it's perfect for me." That's fine. They can change their minds, but we're trying to give a realistic calendar of events and budget, so that everyone's on the same page, so that when we're presenting invoicing, that there's no surprises.
Mm-hmm. Well, it must take quite a bit of time to put together that budget.
It does, but it is time well spent.
Right. So are they on any kind of like, not a down payment, but any kind of monetary contribution to get this budget, or is that all done before they've paid anything?
We do have a small fee for service, and that's, how do I say this? That's kind of to keep the tire kickers from wasting our time.
Well, right. I know I had a hard time phrasing the question, but it's like, are they going to go get, you know, estimates or budgets from, you know, everybody, and then, you know, never use them? And you've put so much time and effort into it.
Right. And that's why we have a small little fee for service on the front end,
mm-hmm.
Which if somebody is serious about their project, has never been a problem.
Right. Okay.
I think that people just in general understand when they go to work, they expect to get paid. When we go to work, we expect to get paid.
Right. So you have the fee for service, and then then it's like, what? Okay, we're going to do it. Let's go.
Yeah, and then it could start out as something as simple as the sketch on the back of a bar napkin.
Okay.
And then we develop that idea. And we do a first draft of, okay, well, this is, you know, based on what you said initially, here's mm-hmm. here's a more refined sketch.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just keep working through that process over and over again. I don't know why it is, but it seems like it takes about 3 revisions to go from the initial concept to, this is the thing that we're doing. This right. is what we're building. My world record actually is 21 appointments.
Is that, was somebody changing their mind a lot or?
Yeah. So what happened was, and I understood it. She was talking to her friends and she would show them, you know, the paperwork and this and that, and all the plans and the color boards, all that. And she would show it to her friends. And they'd be like, oh, well, in my house, I did this. So then she would want to try something else. But ironically, you know what house we ended up building?
What?
The very first one.
Oh, see?
Hers.
Yeah.
Hers.
So she just didn't trust that.
I think she had some very well-meaning friends who were trying to help out. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to investigate those possibilities.
Yeah.
But the truth is that whenever, it doesn't matter if you're building a house, if you're doing a remodel, if you're putting together your commercial business, honestly, it needs to be you and not anybody else. It needs to be about you, your situation, your family, mm-hmm. and how you feel about the space.
Yeah, you're going to be living there.
Yep.
Wow. Okay, so then you have to order everything you need. And
yeah, like, absolutely.
So what's the nitty gritty?
Yeah, so once everybody is in agreement that this is the structure, this is where it belongs, that's where we start getting involved some of our amazing subcontractors. That's how we're going to get a foundation put in. That's where we go to the lumber yard and order the lumber package, which is all the 2x4s, the trusses, the joists, the backbone of that structure. And we just start putting it together and you build, I mean, it's just like anything in life, you build off of a solid foundation mm-hmm. and you move up.
Yeah. So even though you have subcontractors, you're buying the lumber for them to use? Is that how it works?
Oh, yes, of course.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I didn't know that if they came with their lumber, but no, the subcontractors do the labor and they don't have to get the materials.
Yep, and we make sure all the materials are delivered. That's part of the logistics of the business,
mm-hmm.
is making sure that everything from the concrete to the doors and windows to the drywall, all of it, mm-hmm. that it shows up at that job site per a specified date based on the calendar of events that has to happen for the structure to be built on time. Because we know from the beginning that we're going to have a closing date with whoever the client has as their banker.
Uh-huh.
And we've got to hit that closing date.
So then you work backwards.
Then you work backwards from that closing date.
Oh, my gosh. So, well, if any delay by anyone, right? Because it's sequential, obviously.
That's right.
The building. You have to do it in order.
That's right.
But I can see where relationships that, you know, the building the relationships, you said you're wonderful subcontractors. You've obviously built relationships with them. Mm-hmm. So they want to mm-hmm. keep working with you.
Absolutely. And really what it comes down to, it's just like anything in life. Don't be a jerk. Right?
Is that a t-shirt? It should be.
It should be.
Yeah, yeah.
It should be. And so, you know, when we're working with our subs, these are very valuable members of our team. These are professionals. They know what they're doing. And, you know, we don't go chasing around looking for the next cheapest guy. We're looking for the person who can do the job right, who mm-hmm. will be ethical, who will be fair, who won't cut corners, and who will do their very best to keep things moving on schedule. And we value them very much.
Yeah, I can see that that's important. And you depend on them. And they like getting the business.
I'm sure that doesn't hurt their feelings. But, no. you know, I mean, we all make the joke. None of us are in this for the practice.
Wow, I haven't heard that one before. Wow.
And so surrounding yourself by professionals who are very skilled at their trade,
mm-hmm.
That makes your life a million times easier, for sure.
Wow. So it all goes up in order. and the client is involved?
Do they absolutely? Absolutely. We, you know, and we tell folks, hey, look, if you want to do some sweat equity, that's okay. Go ahead. That's fine.
Wow.
You know, and just working that partnership so that they feel seen, heard, appreciated, that they understand that this is their home and that they have a sense of pride in the process and in what's going on. So when they move in on moving day, because the very last thing we do right before they move in is we go in and, I mean, we clean the place flawlessly. There's not a speck of dust, dirt, nothing anywhere.
Wow.
So that all they have to do is pull up the moving truck, put their furniture in, and sit down at the end of the day and have a lovely experience.
That sounds like heaven. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. And then that's why the word of mouth advertising works.
Yes. Yeah.
Who did your house?
Yep.
Oh, and so rewarding to see something from start to finish like that.
Yep. And we're very lucky. We have clients who allow us to do really beautiful, creative things.
They're not all cookie cutters.
Oh, no, we don't. We don't go there.
You know, what is that called anyway? Did it used to be called track housing?
Yeah.
Or prefabs, or I don't know what it's called nowadays.
Yep. You know, there are certainly subdivisions that you might walk into where every house looks like the house before it, and then one before that, and the one before that. That's not really our bread and butter. We don't do spec homes, generally speaking. We want to create a beautiful home for a particular client, a particular family, and the way in which they want to live.
Mm-hmm. So they're all different.
Every single one of them's different.
Like, yeah.
So, and it's a lot of fun. I have a lot of fun with it.
Oh, yeah. And so, like you say, sometimes they'll let you really, really be creative. And that would just depend on the client, right? Because some would be a little nervous about that, you know?
Yeah, and there have been some clients I've had that are extra creative where I'm like, okay.
But do you try to counsel them if it's too creative? Or do you just do what they want
I
you
learned
to do?
I learned a very valuable lesson early in my career. I was talking to a client and they wanted a red kitchen. Which there's nothing wrong with having a red kitchen, by the way.
Okay, let's get that.
But what they wanted was red walls, a red floor, red cabinets, and a red countertop. I mean, literally a red kitchen.
Oh, okay.
And I remember I said something to the effect of, you know, I like red too, but maybe we could use it as an accent color, you know, and we could do this or that, da-da-da-da-da. And this client turned to me and said, who's paying for this?
Okay. They went straight to being offended, right?
Yep. And I said, you know what? I love red. Let's do it.
Oh, but I want to know how it turned out.
It's not in my portfolio.
Okay. It's red. I mean, it's what the client wanted.
It's what the client wanted.
Yep.
And I remember we had some carpenters and some subs who were on the job, and they started getting into because cabinets come in a box. And so they started unboxing the cabinets.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a phone call and they said, we have a problem. I was like, is something broken? What's going on? And they're like, the cabinets are red. Like, and I was like, yeah, that's right. That's correct.
They're supposed to be red.
And they said, but the floor is red.
Yeah.
I was like, I know. And they're like, and the painter painted the walls red. I'm like, understood. Just put the cabinets in. Just let it go.
Yeah.
That's what they wanted. That to them is their dream kitchen.
Yeah,
and
that's
it was
a lot of energy.
Yes. And for those clients, that was their dream kitchen.
Right.
And I was like, and I learned a really valuable lesson that just because something is not of my particular preference doesn't mean that it's wrong for them.
Yeah.
And, I didn't send out a photographer on that one.
Because it turned out just how you thought it would, you know, as far as that's a lot of red.
It was very, very, you walked into the room and you kind of turned pink. Mm-hmm. But you know what? They loved it.
That's it. They loved it. They were happy with it.
They loved it. They were happy with it. And so it didn't matter what my preferences were. And I learned such a valuable lesson from that. I was so grateful for that client because it really opened my eyes to it's okay for folks to be however they want to be in their own homes. It's, yeah. You know, they're the ones, as that client said to me, mm-hmm. who's paying for this?
Ouch.
Yep. You're right. Yep. You're right.
Oh my goodness. Oh, so you have lots of different projects in different stages, right?
That's true.
Mm-hmm. So that's I can see where that's, you know, the variety would be much more interesting than perhaps you were doing in a corporate job.
Well, I mean, I've been fortunate. I have done kitchens in New York City. I've done kitchens in L.A., Denver, Chicago,
I
Kansas
had no
City.
Wait. I thought everything was in Iowa.
So because of the, remember earlier when we were talking about the virtual reality
yes.
piece of it?
Yes.
That allowed me to begin to sell nationwide.
Oh, wow.
And so what happens is that
amazing.
Is that folks who places I'll never go and people who I will personally never meet, I will do a virtual reality remodel of whatever mm-hmm. their project is.
A design session.
I'll do a design session and uh-huh. draw up the virtual reality and say, okay, well, you know, based on this, this is what we think the line item budget on this project's going to be. And we have the following services. You can order cabinets from us. You can order flooring from us. You can order countertops, tile, you know, hardware, that kind of thing. And we'll just load it on a semi and send it to you.
Oh my gosh.
So
the only thing missing are the subcontractors.
That's it. They've got to get their own subcontractors.
I had no idea this was going on. This, my mind is blown. Wow.
So again, it's just a different way. So I think a lot of this really came out of 2008.
The downturn.
That was a little bit of a rough year.
So you were already with the
yes.
company then. Okay.
Yep. And that was a pretty rough year. And so then we started having conversations of, okay, how do we broaden mm-hmm. our base so that we don't ever get caught flat footed again?
Okay. So that was good.
So this was a way to sort of broaden that. So that let's say that the market here locally wasn't as great as one might hope, then here's another avenue for us to have an income stream coming in
mm-hmm.
and to have revenue coming in.
Clever.
So we've certainly done quite a bit of that. And light commercial work comes into that as well.
Okay.
You know, of if the housing market's not necessarily doing what you want it to, you know, then the commercial world, you know, doing light commercial is a place to go also looking, because we take it very seriously that, you know, that everybody has a job to do
mm-hmm.
and that folks count on that work in order to be able to pay their own bills. And so we work really, really hard at that.
Oh yeah. So light commercial, what does that mean? Are those renovations or do you build structures?
Could be either. Typically they're going to be a smaller type of commercial project, like maybe a restaurant or a dentist's office or a library or something like that.
Hmm.
We're certainly not set up to build, you know, a skyscraper or something of that variety. That's not our bread and butter. But the smaller structures, certainly we work at those.
What about rural, like outbuildings?
Oh yeah, I mean we'll definitely. You need a pole barn?
Yeah,
we got you.
Yeah,
no problem.
Okay, everything. Wow.
So we try and be really flexible because, again, you don't know, you know, obviously with the last 2 years, we've been in a position of relative uncertainty.
Yes.
We've seen, yes, and we've seen definite supply chain issues. I mean, that's just the reality.
Yeah.
Of the business.
And that's going to affect your being able to follow the sequence that you need to. I can imagine you'd be waiting for one thing to be happening.
Yep.
Hmm.
Yep, exactly. Of, you know, when are my windows going to be here?
Mm-hmm.
One of our vendors who we've used for years was recently hit by a tornado that went through Iowa.
Oh.
And so then not only is it an issue of the original supply chain issue, but now, okay, well, you know, they've got to make repairs to their facility.
Yes.
And now this is, you know, causing backup. And so we just have to, that's where I was talking earlier when we initially meet with clients, that we want to make sure that we can have a good, friendly relationship.
Right.
Because these kind of things, they're beyond our control.
Yeah.
And so to be able to have a client base that, I'm not saying that they're thrilled.
Right.
Nobody would be, but that at least we can continue to have, you know, a cordial relationship.
Yes. Wow. There's so many things you don't have control over.
That is true.
Mm-hmm. So it's how you, you know, deal with it, right? How you adapt.
That's, yep. And,
that's what you need to do.
And yes. And our business is such that, you know, we've had to learn. Sometimes you have to pivot. It's just what you have to
pivot.
Do.
Yep. That's a great word.
And you know, we do.
Well, I wanted to ask you what it's like being a woman in the construction business.
Oh, geez.
Oh, and it's probably different now that you're very seasoned versus when you were first starting, but or maybe not.
You know, I'm always looking for other women. It's clearly a very male oriented career. But having said that, you know, I know that more women, more and more, are coming into the trades. I'm excited about that. It's a really great career if you enjoy doing something different all the time, every day.
Mm-hmm.
Being outside, you know, I might be on a job site and then back at the office doing, you know, an initial client meet and greet. And then maybe I'm a vendor putting together color boards. You know, just like you see on HGTV. And so there's a lot of different aspects to it. And so, of course, you know, I love it, you know, when women choose to go into the trades.
In the title of my show, I refer to a celebration of joy in the workplace. And you've been telling me about a lot of your workplaces. It sounds like you're everywhere. It's much different from mine, which is a classroom. How much are you outside?
It just really depends on the season. You know, I mean, I can and have been outside when it's 30 below. Not my favorite part of the season, by the way. But, you know, typically during the summer, you know, I'll be out and about. And, you know, the first time I'm going to set foot on a job site is just to get the lay of the land, see what the lot looks like. But the next time is when the floor has been framed and the initial walls are up so that I can measure for ordering various products that will then go into that finished structure. And that's all right. You know, I mean, I enjoy being out and, you know, with the sun on me and the wind in my hair. I like it.
And it's very physical work.
It is.
And you like that aspect of it compared to sitting a sedentary office job?
So at my previous job, when I worked in corporate America, I was in this little itty bitty cubicle that was maybe 6x6, something like that, tiny. And it felt like I was in jail. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just, and the walls were gray and the furniture was gray and everything was gray. So this is much more preferable to me because I get to drive places. I get to see people. I get to, you know, go to different spots. Some of these job sites are absolutely gorgeous. And you just stare out, you know, over, you know, the valley below. And it's just really pretty. So I much prefer this for my personality.
Right. Wow. And how wonderful that you just, well, you didn't fall into it. You married into it.
a little bit. Yeah.
But you also jumped at the opportunity.
Absolutely. Yeah,
you could have just said, I don't know how to do that. That's thanks for offering, but I don't know how to do that. So find somebody else.
Yeah. And I was just like, you know what? Working in this kind of corporate grind, and I can do it because, I mean, obviously you can do anything, you know, I mean, if you need to put food on the table, you got to put food on the table. But this is just a much better fit for me, for my personality. I really like it.
It sounds really interesting to me. Well, you do like it, but now how would you answer this question? What do you like? What is it about the job that brings you joy? Now, there are probably many things, but what comes to mind first when I ask that question?
So I had a client once, this was when I realized for the very first time that what we do is not just building houses or doing a remodel or whatever, you know, putting on a new roof. I had a client come in and we did our initial, you know, kind of meet and greet at the office. And they said, you know, we need a full remodel, but you know, we don't have a whole lot of money, but you know, we need it done. And so I said, okay, I said, I'll tell you what, I'll come out, I'll take a look, see what you've got going on. And what it was a smaller home. And it was older. So, I mean, it was in need of a remodel, but the reason that it wasn't the aesthetics. It was because they had a daughter who used a wheelchair. And they hadn't eaten dinner as a family in like 15 years because she could only go into two rooms of the house. Wow. That was all she could fit through.
Wow.
And I took a look around and they're like, well, what do you think? I'm like, I think we're going to get it done somehow, some way. And at the end of this area right here that she's never been able to go, that's where the kitchen table is going to be. You guys are going to have dinner together.
Oh.
And so we went in, you know, gutted the place, widened every single door in the house, widened the hallways, and just basically got the job done. And the budget wasn't very big, but I was just like, you know, guys, we just got to get this done.
Right.
We just have to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, put up a ramp outside, you know, so that she can come and go as she pleases, mm-hmm. rather than having to wait for somebody, you know, to carry her wheelchair downstairs and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And after the job was done, I got a thank you card and a photograph. And the photograph was of that family sitting at that kitchen table having dinner together for the first time in 15 years.
15 years. Oh, wow.
And that's when I understood this is actually what the difference is in mm-hmm. this job, is paying attention, seeing a challenge, resolving the challenge. And that way people can live together in a space of harmony, in a place where they belong, mm-hmm. in a place that makes sense to them and their families.
Mm-hmm. And they feel good in that space. Yeah. So you're creating, helping them create that space.
Exactly. Ugh. And it's very collaborative. I love working with our clients. Love it.
Yeah, the collaborative part. I can see that the you're touching base even once everything starts. You're still touching base, and you must be sad sometimes when it's over and you say goodbye.
Well, I mean, there. You know, it's funny you mentioned that because I have a lot of clients that like we became friends. You know, well, and I see them. You know, I see them at the grocery store or wherever, and I'm like, hey, how you doing? How's the fam? How'd the ball game go? I mean, when you're that involved with someone's life for that many months in a row, it's not, at least for me, it's not just transactional. There are real relationships being built there.
Well, and they can tell that, you know, if and that's what makes them want to work with you, because then they know it's authentic. Otherwise, if they think, wow, they don't care, they don't really care about me because it's just a deal, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a beautiful story. I like the story.
So one of my, and it was just the lesson that family taught me of this isn't just a job. This is a way to help folks, you know, live in an environment that is wonderful for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it.
Oh, that's so good to hear. Cause I want to talk to people who love their jobs, and I had a sneaking suspicion that you loved your job. So, whew.
Wow. Yeah, I'm pretty passionate about it. I'm pretty passionate about it.
Well, even though we have very different jobs, so this is the part in the show where I've tried to find some similarities. And so you just briefly, though, you're talking about that. I'm going to use the word magic that you're helping them create or that you're working with. So that's part of what I do with language instruction. I'm working with immigrants, and the thing that they all have in common is that they really need English in this country to pursue their goals. For anything that they want to do, they all want to get better at it, and so it's really rewarding to work together with them and see their progress. And they're all different too, just like all of your clients are different and they have different needs. I have students coming from different educational backgrounds. Some have already studied a lot of formal grammar, but they haven't had any speaking practice. Some come with like a master's degree from their country. Some come with a, you know, eighth grade education from their country. And they're all in a completely sort of different set of skills. But the thing they have in common is they really are really need the English. And they might need it for different things. Like one student might be like, I really want to continue my profession, so I need like college level English. Another student would be like, I need to be able to, you know, help my kids with homework and, you know, be able to talk to their teachers. So just every individual is a different case. So even though I am teaching a classroom, I'm still very, very cognizant of each individual and in tune to sort of where they're at every given time and whether or not, you know, what do they need as far as something special. But when you talked about how you were, should we say onboarding? That's such a cool word these days. Starting a job and just learning by doing. And I have my teaching license. I ended up, this is my, you know, change of life, career, whatever. My midlife career change was becoming a teacher and getting my teaching license. And of course, you know, academically I was prepared, but you know, it's not the same as actually doing it. So there have been lots of times where I feel like, well, I don't know if I know what I'm doing right now? You know, I'm going to try this. And there's a little bit of trial and error as far as like, and not saying that you were doing any trial by error, but maybe you felt like you were.
Oh, no, it was trial by fire.
yeah.
I was learning a million different skills all at the exact same time. But I'd still do it over again.
But, you know, we have had technology changes. So something like it's the brand name wasn't a smart board, but a smart board, where all of a sudden, like, that was a huge change because, hey, I started when there was a chalkboard and chalk. And actually, I was one of the few teachers who actually liked chalk. I love the feeling of the chalk going across, not the screeching, but the like a chalk going across. And then we went to whiteboards, and then it's like, oh, so now I'm going to do it through software on my laptop and it's going to be projected on the board. So there was a learning curve there. And it's just like, well, I'm just going to figure it out because you know what? I don't have the whiteboard anymore. Yep. I don't have anything else I can write on. So I'm going to use this and I'm going to do the training and figure it out. And that's how I'm doing the lesson. So yep. Sink or swim.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much that's exactly how it was for me of, well, I made a decision. I made a choice and now I've got to make it a good one. And just that, it didn't hurt that I had a natural curiosity for it and that I was surrounded by really good people, really good mentors, who did their best, to try and teach me different aspects of the building trades. That didn't hurt at all. And I always try and pay that forward. I always try and be a good mentor to others who are coming up behind me, because there are a lot of moving parts. And as you say, everybody is different. Everybody's learning style is different.
Mm-hmm.
And being open to that, the trades are a great place to make a really good living. And I have zero regrets for moving from a corporate office into a muddy old job site.
Mm-hmm. Well, you might just be healthier because of it.
I think so. Certainly my mental health is better. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not just sitting in that gray little cube.
Wow. Well, what's up for you in the future of the business? Where do you see things going in the future?
I mean, right now, I think that anybody in the building trades industry would agree that supply chain issues continue to be a challenge. At some point, that will no longer be the case. But I mean, you have to deal with the cards that you're dealt. And so we certainly are. There's always something new to learn. There's always something on the horizon coming up, and I look forward to diving into that and whatever that may be.
Yes, it sounds like you're flexible enough to like, well, you know, this things are changing and we need to explore this.
I know that sometimes small businesses get very dogmatic, mm-hmm. about how they do business and that nothing ever changes. But the truth is, you're going to have your greatest innovation and not coincidentally, innovation and revenue go hand in hand.
Ah.
And so by continuing to always be curious, always be open, always be asking questions, do that lunch and learn.
Mm-hmm.
Those things really do help. And at least, you know, in the case of a lunch and learn, even if it was a bust, well, you know, you got a ham on rye. So, you know.
Yeah. Wow. That's a great attitude. Great way to think of it. Well, what advice would you have for somebody wanting to get into this profession? I know you've actually talked a lot about mentoring or just encouraging people to get into the trades. So is it like, what about just like becoming working as an electrician, or is it hard to get in as an apprentice into those programs? Or
I would say not. And certainly we've done internships, apprenticeships for as long as I've been there. And I've been at this, you know, full time for 15 years. That's where you find your future talent. And so, you know, if you're a person that's curious about, any aspect of the trades, whether it be carpentry, welding, plumbing, whatever, Getting in with a good group, you know, getting a mentor, having the opportunity to be on some job sites and to learn whether or not that's for you or not, I think is a really critical experience. And I was always grateful for my opportunities in that way.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah, because it's good to do some exploration and try it, see if you like it.
Well, and it taught me not only what I wanted to do, but what I did not want to do.
That's right.
I mean, there are just some, you know, God bless every roofer in this country. I love you. I'm not going to be on the roof with you.
Yeah,
I've done a lot of roofs. I'm doing no more.
Oh, but you have done it. You paid your dues.
I paid my dues, but I just, that's a job for me. And it actually has nothing to do with the work itself. It's the heights. I don't like being at those kind of heights. They make me feel funny. So, but you know, for some folks, they love it. You know what? Go find out if you love it or not. And, you know, and if you do, then do it and you can make a great living at it. And if you don't, you know, you move on to the next thing.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm going to have to like end our conversation now because I know that you're a busy lady just hearing you talk about all of that. And I thank you so much for telling me everything that you do. I loved learning about it. There were a lot of surprises there for me. But I can see how your job brings you joy and it brings others joy as well. So that's like the perfect combination.
It's a win-win. It's winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Love it. Well, I like to end with a toast. So if you have your virtual or real glass right now, I know you told me you had a cup of tea, but whatever you would like to join me in a toast right now, because we want to toast our careers right now.
Sure.
Ready? Cheers.
Salut.
Ah, salut. Thanks a lot, Lisa.
Bye. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to A Toast to Work. I hope you're finding joy in your job.